sounds like a story to me. Some crazy fable that you would not believe.
Welcome to the Avram Davidson universe, where we listen to some of the greatest stories ever written. Adored by Ursula Le Guin, Neil Gaiman, Leonard Nimoy, Ray Bradbury, and Stephen King. Enjoy classic tales such as Are All the Seas with Oysters, The Golem, Sources of the Nile, and many others.
Hello and welcome to the Avram Davidson Universe, a podcast where we'll be discussing Avram stories. This week we are discussing Murder is Murder from the Investigations of Avram Davidson, originally published in 1973 and then collected with the rest of the investigations. Today we have a special guest, the curator and author on onereadingnurse.com, a blog about many, 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 many books. We have Athena on the show. Thank you for coming, Athena.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Athena, can you, your background is absolutely incredible. Can you pan a little bit and tell us about what books you have over there?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I always wanted a house full of books. Cool. And it used to be a dining room when I first bought that house, but who needs that? So I made a library. Wow. Probably half of it is sci-fi and fantasy. And then I have everything from, I don't know, American history to general fiction, mystery, everything. Wow. Not really romance, but everything else.
That's fair. We did a long couple weeks on the genre podcast, reading lots of romances, and now our brains are kind of need a break from romance for a while. It's very cool to see all that science fiction and fantasy. So One Reading Nurse is really interesting, and you read a ton of books, and you are pretty much you have some guest posts, but I think mostly you're writing all of these articles and you're reading all of these books. You read a ton.
Yeah. So mostly I do write all of it. I have been finding more collaborations and interviews recently because honestly the workload is bleh. But I do read between 7 to 12 books a month. A lot of independently published authors too. Wow. I just do what I can at this point, which is becoming less and less, but I do what I can.
Did you say 12 a month?
Sometimes.
Wow.
They're not like super long books. And I confess with like my eyesight, I do a lot of audiobook reading now. So that's probably weird. Half of those are audiobooks.
Oh, audiobooks are incredible. I subscribe, and for genre, we read. I like to read while I listen. Or just listen. If I'm reading sometimes, I notice I'll go for a few pages, don't know what's happened. So I like audiobooks a lot. You mentioned science fiction and fantasy, and that kind of brought you towards Avram, I think. We're reading a mystery today, but how did you first start getting into Avram?
So I had never heard of him, but there was a local, like, independently owned a bookstore, and sometimes I would go buy some sci-fi, sometimes I would get a fantasy. One time I bought a stack of thrillers, and one day the curator goes, "Have you heard of," and she holds up the Avram Davidson treasure, and I go, "I have not, good sir." She gave it to me as part of my book collection, and that kind of spiraled off into that. Because he said, "Well, here's an author that really writes a little bit of everything, and you read a little bit of everything, so there's going to be something for you in here."
Yeah. Like what? We're reading a mystery today. Lots of science fiction, fantasy, and I think he won awards in all three.
All three, yeah. I think I read Hugo Award, and Edgar, and what's the other one for the fantasy?
World Fantasy. Okay, so he got a World Fantasy Award in science fiction and fantasy, and the World Fantasy Life Achievement Award, right, as well as the Edgar and Hugo. Wow.
He's an incredibly diverse author.
And you read the entire treasury. I saw your blog. You went through the different decades, and you liked, I think you said you liked the 50s the best. And I saw you liked the Golem and the Goobers. The Goobers is great.
Yeah. And the house that the Blakeleys. Was that one? The house the Blakeleys built?
Exactly. Yeah. The house
that was my favorite one.
Wow. Okay. That one's a good one. Yeah, Emma and Seth discussed that one. And we did the Goobers a few months ago. That one's a very strange one, but very fun. Athena, I'd like to listen now to Murder is Murder so we can come back and discuss it more in depth. But for now, here is Murder is Murder, published in 1973, written by Avram Davidson.
Murder is Murder. Murder is Murder is a very short story with a very striking title and the conflicts of a Russian crime novel. The story was published in 1973 and spins variations on the familiar theme of murder for inheritance. Avram was a master of idiosyncratic variations. When a publisher asked him for biographical information, he responded, "For the benefit of those interested in astrology, my rising sign is attached to a Goodyear blimp, and my moon is in Omaha." Michael Kurland, in his introduction to the Redward Edward papers, described the quirky Davidson persona. Avram has a whim of iron. He holds a ninth degree black belt in idiosyncrasy, being the originator of several of the more complex modern moves. He is not antagonistic toward all mechanical devices. He is quite fond of the water wheel and maintains a strict neutrality toward the spinning jenny. G.D. Guy Benson used to tell himself that if Cousin May had never borrowed the book from the library, he would never have got the idea. But all the same, he rather thought it would have come to him anyway. The need was constant. The solution so easy and so near. "So, Guy," Cousin May had said in that deep voice to which authority, amusement, and scorn seemed to come quite naturally. "So, Guy, you agree with that wretched fellow in the book, do you?" Guy passed a hand through gray blonde hair, thinning fast now. "In the theoretical discussion, yes. But not in the brutal murder of the old miser, no." May boomed at him. "But what is the difference?" She waved the library copy of Crime and Punishment. In the chair by the marble-topped fireplace, Cousin Jenny pouted. She never liked conversations to grow loud and excited. It disturbed her. Even now, in fact, her soft little hands fluttered nervously toward the tray on the tiny table next to her. "What is the difference between them?" Cousin May demanded. "The theoretical question, if you could press a button and kill a man whom you had never seen but whose death would make you rich." Cousin Jenny quavered. "Oh, please, don't talk about such things." The coal fire in the grate cast glints of ruddy light on the small but richly furnished room. "Presents no moral issue at all, different from bludgeoning to death an old miser for the money hidden in a trunk," Cousin May trumpeted, ignoring Cousin Jenny. "Murder is murder." Guy disagreed. "Murder is as murder feels," was how he put it. "Violent killing would feel like murder, but pressing a button would not feel like it. And besides, all men must die. My man dies painlessly. Think what later agonies my simply pressing a button may well have saved him." In her fluty voice, Cousin Jenny said, "Oh, such a morbid conversation. May, dear, would you mind some fresh water, please? This in the jug is stale and tepid. Little bubbles, you know." Her voice died away. Cousin May shifted her heavy face to where Cousin Jenny sat, a little vial in one thin hand, an empty glass in the other. "Another one of your capsules?" she snorted. "I need it," said Jenny staunchly. "Capsules, pills, powders, injections, diathermy. Every doctor in the city has gone to Florida at least twice on what he's gotten from you." May's voice dwindled away into the kitchen, from which a sound of running water came, then grew louder as she returned with a wet, glistening tumbler. "Your heart, your head, your nerves, your enzymes. Oh, well, here you are. Drink it down. No use my doing any more talking. But she continued to talk as capsule and water rippled their way down Cousin Jenny's throat, now beginning to grow thin as the years went on and on and on. Guy thought of all those years and all the money spent on doctors by Cousin Jenny in those years, and then one single sentence of Cousin May's broke through his bubble thoughts. "These sickly fancies of yours will be the death of you yet," said Cousin May. That was 5 years ago. 5 years in which Guy's position in the world, which had never been too good, had got steadily worse. The three-room apartment had given way to one room, without bath, in a decayed lodging house. The truth was that Guy gambled, and his luck was bad. Someday, he assured himself, his cards would turn, his number would come up at the wheel, his stock, his horses. But in the meanwhile, he lived in a cheap little room and 6 days a week ate scanty meals. But Sunday night, he dined at Cousin Jenny's. The candlelight, the embroidered linen, the savory soup, the rich brown glazed fowl, the roast, the multitude of smaller, though by no means small, dishes moving round the table, curried this, candied that, stewed something, buttered something else, dessert, delicious pastries, coffee with rum in it. Then, in the small front room, there were brandy and Turkish cigarettes, while the coal fire glimmered on the polished furniture, golden picture frames, and leather-bound books. Once at such a moment, there had come to Guy's mind a phrase from the Bible. He supposed it was from the Bible. Perhaps he had heard it in church in those dim, far-off days when he still had gone to church. "Hast thou slain and also taken possession?" The money had all been made by their common grandfather, but Guy's father had lost much of his share, and Guy had lost the rest. Cousin May's income, though small, was sufficient, since she lived with Cousin Jenny, whose own father had not only retained all he inherited, but actually had increased it. About money, Cousin Jenny seldom spoke, but Guy knew that she had two fixed ideas on the subject. One, money should not be given to young people. Young people. He was 5 years her junior, because it was bad for their character and better for them to stand on their own feet. Two, family money should be left in the family. Aside from a few small charitable bequests, all Cousin Jenny's estate would go to Guy and May. That is, when she died. But year succeeded year, and she continued to ail, to consume capsules, pills, powders before meals, after meals, on retiring at night, and on awakening in the morning. She made the rounds from one expensive doctor to another, and she never, so far as Guy could see, grew any iller or feebler or looked any worse. If you could press a button and kill, whose death would make you rich, would you do it? And Guy's heart cried out, "Yes, yes, I would." He had had the button for 2 years now. Soon after he had moved to his present room, a medical student expelled for drunkenness had killed himself in a dingy lodging house. Guy, summoned by the worried landlady into the dark hall smelling eternally of boiled cabbage and cheap bacon, broke down the door. The body was on the bed, the box was on the table by the bed, and in the box were two tiny white tablets. When the police arrived, there was only one tablet in the box. The other was in Guy's shirt pocket. For 2 long years, wrapped in a screw of paper, tucked into an old sock, it had lain in a corner of a drawer in his rickety bureau. Guy had approached Cousin Jenny's house from the rear to avoid any possibility of being seen on the street. He was now at the back door, key in hand. He had the key lawfully. It had been given to him to come and check the house during the lady's annual vacation, just to see that everything was in order, and he had retained it at their request, just in case you ever need it. There was no chance of his being heard as he walked stealthily into the darkened house, for Cousin May slept so soundly by nature that fire bells could not awaken her, and Cousin Jenny always, naturally, took something to make her sleep. And if by one chance in 10,000 someone did awaken and ask why he was there, I felt a presentiment. I had to see if everything was all right. Jenny would marvel and accept, and May would snort, but no more than usual. It was all so easy as pressing a button. Alongside Cousin Jenny's bed stood her night table with its tray of medical supplies. On the tray was a small saucer in which she put the large capsule she would take on waking up in the morning. Guy knew the capsules were not sealed. For once, he had heard her complain that one had opened and spilled. It would be necessary for him only to pull off the top cap, insert the tiny tablet, close the capsule, and replace it. Then, as silently as he had entered, leave. I should have done this years ago, he thought, entering the hall. Somehow, he did not feel so calm, so cool now that he was inside. His breath came harder, his heart beat faster, and there seemed to be not enough air. To his surprise, he found his legs trembling. This will never do, he thought. In the hall, his eyes made out the shape of a chair. I will sit down for a moment and rest, he said to himself, just for a moment until I feel better. Next morning, at 9 o'clock, a canary-colored taxicab stopped in front of the house and let out Cousin May and Cousin Jenny, each with a suitcase. Oh, I knew he'd be late, said Cousin Jenny, petulantly. Well, I won't enter the house until he comes. Now, you have only yourself to blame, said Cousin May. I never heard anything, never saw anything. Such a nuisance staying in that hotel. I hope you'll have no more notions like this one, Jenny. Jenny moved from one grievance to another. But I did hear them, May, she protested, wide-eyed and pouting. I really did. Rustling noises at night, in the walls, in the woodwork, in the hall, insects, mice, why, perhaps even rats, she shuddered. May shrugged, looked at her watch. Where is that man from Wilson's? She asked. He's 5 minutes late. She walked down the steps to peer both ways along the street, Jenny following. Curb your imagination, Jenny, May's voice ran on. Beware of these sickly fancies, or they will be the death of you yet. Behind them, on the front door, was a sign with large red letters. In each of its four corners was a skull and crossbones. Danger, the sign read. Do not enter. Poison gas. Rats. Wilson Pest Control. Inside the house, all was silent.
Okay, Athena, what do you think? What do you think of this story? Murder is murder.
So, I like it. I like that it, because, I mean, he also writes some really long short stories that are more like almost novella length, but I like that this is, it's short, it's, and I'm having another tongue twister.
It's short, it's packs some punch, and you kind of have to, you really have to pay attention to it. I had to read it twice to get exactly what's going on. Did you know exactly what was going on when you were reading it the first time? It took me a while.
Well, I read this, like, the last portion of it twice because I kind of missed the catch at first, but that seems to be a theme with a lot of his stories. Like, you think he's going to end up in one spot, and then he goes, aha, I got you. I'm going to do this instead. And that's what he did in this story.
Yeah, I've noticed for all of the investigation stories that I've read, every time I'm always thinking, okay, something nefarious is happening. Something bad is going to happen, but I don't exactly know why. And I don't exactly know when it's going to happen. And then I kind of get the significance right at the end. And then I have to read it a second time. There's another one that's the third sacred well of the temple where someone is suddenly murdered. And then I realized at the end, it's just because this guy wants to keep his life habits. So it's really unclear until the very end, and then it really comes to life.
Right. And this, but that's one too, a theme in a lot of his stories too, is that sometimes it's not until the last paragraph or even the last like sentence in the whole story when he gives you that aha moment And then you have to go back and go, wait, what? What? Okay, cool.
I know. Yeah. It's like, well, okay, you took us there.
Keep reading. You'll get there.
Yeah. It's always an interesting experience. Yeah. It's like the opposite of a cold open. It's like the cold open happens at the end almost. It's all leading up to it. And why did you choose this story in particular? What drew you to it?
I think I liked how he opened with a moral question, like, hey, what would you do if, you know, would you kill somebody in order to get rich if you only had to press a button? And I kind of liked how that just spiraled into, as I said, like a short story that you don't have to, like some of his stories, I feel like I have to have a PhD in neuroscience to get the punchline. But with Murder is Murder, it's a pretty straightforward ethical debate, a fairly straightforward story. And then, you know, it just packed a punch at the end.
A pest control poison punch. I like that.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. Well, it just happened. I mean, it's already in the episode. So if you skipped ahead, I'm sorry.
That could go. Oh, yeah, you're right, because they already heard it. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So. Spoilers. Spoilers. I'm going to ask you. Oh, right. The ethical debate. I love this, how we begin with so Cousin Jenny and Cousin May, right? Yeah, Cousin Mary, and then Guy. They're all sitting in the living room talking about, would you press this button that kills somebody if you could get $1 million? You don't know who's going to die. You kill them, and then you get $1 million. What do you think of their argument? And does anyone have a better argument in this story?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, me personally, I don't think there's any way that I would press a button and kill somebody, whether or not it felt like murder. But I did think it was interesting how, like, one of the characters said, well, it doesn't feel like murder, so I think it's okay. And the other one's like, are you crazy? That's still murder. And then it all went downhill from there. What do you think?
Yeah, it did go downhill from there. I really like that. Like you just said, there are two perspectives. Cousin Jenny is just really nervous. Or no, wait, sorry. Yeah, Cousin Jenny is the really nervous kind of older lady. She's like, no, let's not talk about this. But Cousin Mary says it very clearly. Murder. No, it is May. Sorry. Cousin May says murder is murder. And then Guy, that murder is as murder feels. That is a terrible argument. It doesn't feel like murder. I'm not, you know, bludgeoning them or hitting them. I'm just pressing a button. I don't even know who will die. I get a check for $1 million and I'm saving them from whatever suffering they might have experienced in life.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't ethically agree with him, but it made for a good
it makes for an interesting discussion. I noticed in all the investigations, there's always a selfishness involved, and maybe that's part of mysteries. But there's another one where it's all these like people at a retirement home, and someone else. There's a murder, and you find out that the motivation for this murder is this one older person just wanted a bigger room, and so he killed the other, pushed him down the stairs, just so he could move from the small room to the big room, and he gets away with it. There's always a selfishness. And what do you think? Like, what is Guy's motivation? Do you feel like he's selfish too?
I think so. I mean, he sounded like he just wanted more gambling money, and that he thought that his cousin is just frittering away all of the family fortune on remedies to stay alive longer, is what it sounded like. So he didn't paint himself as a very moral character. But then again, what are there any good reasons to murder somebody? Like,
that's a good point.
Non-selfish people commit murder? I don't know.
I guess when you start to give it excuses, you are really going into immoral territory. You can't really give an excuse for murder. I mean, if you're...
Usually, especially in books, it's more sketchy people for sketchy motives. I can't really think of any books where somebody, unless it's like a falsely accused person, but Avram doesn't seem to go off on the falsely accused note very often.
No, I haven't read one yet in the investigations where there's someone who's framed or falsely accused. There's people who are suspected, but not falsely accused. He, like you said, his cousin Jenny is getting older and she's constantly sneezing, constantly coughing. She's taking all these pills. She talks about different health problems. He eventually, the way he's going to kill her is using her own medication against her too. So she's definitely defined by getting older and barely hanging on to life. And like you said, spending that money just to have this kind of low quality life. So in his mind, he's thinking that he's doing a moral thing. He's saving her from suffering and the money's not being wasted. But it's interesting how Avram has given him kind of his just desserts or not let him get away with what he wants to do. What do you think of that little twist at the end?
I just honestly, I pictured Avram sitting there going, karma at the end of it. Yeah. Like, you're going to think about this and you're going to think that there's no moral consequence to your actions. Well, here you go, good sir. Like, I'm not going to lie. I laughed when I, once it clicked what happened, I got a pretty good laugh out of it.
I did too. I love the whole idea of, like, he also is giving himself rationalizations about why he's using the back door. So he sneaks over to their house and he's telling himself, well, I have a key and I should have a key because I can go whenever they are in trouble and I can go check on them. And if they say, why are you coming into the house at this hour? I can just say, oh, well, I had a suspicion that you were in danger. And he's telling himself all of these things when he walks in. I love that moment where he's telling himself, oh, God, I don't feel very good. I'm just going to sit down for a minute and feel better.
It must have been like the poison from the exterminator that was getting to his head or something. And then he started like reacting to whatever fumigation was going on and...
Finito. Yes. Pow.
All he had to do was use the front door like a normal person and he would have seen the sign.
Yes. That's just, I love that because... like you said, like a normal person or maybe just like a moral person, you know, he's already making the immoral decision to sneak into the house. It gets worse than that, what he wants to do. But even that, we see that his mind is a little bit twisted. His morals are twisted. He should have used the front door. Seen the warning signs.
Oh, good point.
Oh, guy. Well, what do you think? I know, so... I haven't read a lot of mysteries. I've read a few mysteries, and you are reading some mysteries for the blog, but you are more fantasy and science fiction. But have you picked up on some mystery tropes? Lots of fantasy uses mystery, too. Do you see mystery tropes that you see Avram is using? Have you run into them before?
I mean, there's always, and he mentions this in the story too, that obviously somebody is killing for wealth. They see something that they want that the person has and they go to take it. I mean, I don't know if murdering for wealth is a trope. I mean, there's also like, I don't want to say like family tensions, but I mean, those are two pretty big murder plots. Either you want something or you're trying to get rid of your family for X reason or another, so... Maybe those two themes
for sure. Yeah, trying to get rid of the family inheritance, trying to get the money. I think you're right.
And definitely a big mystery trope. It's always something.
Yeah, that's true. Even did you see Knives Out from like 4 years ago?
See what?
Knives Out. It was a movie. Oh man, okay. Very good. It's like a cozy mystery that came out 4 years ago, and it has Daniel Craig with a Southern accent, like Foghorn Leghorn. It's a good watch, but it's the same idea of family trying to, each family member believes that they deserve the money the most, kind of like Guy here. Well, the old lady doesn't deserve it. I could make better use of it, but all of them are a little bit twisted. They're going to waste the money in their own way, but they believe they're just. It's very, I know, it's nuts.
You'll have to check it out. If I had more, well, I obviously don't watch that many movies. This is what I do, but
that's fair.
Sounds interesting. I like Daniel Craig.
Yeah, he's very funny in this. He's a totally different character in this. Speaking of characters, though, one thing that we always like to do, because damn it, we're going to make a movie. We got to get it done. We got to make an Avram movie about some of these stories. So what do you think if we could cast? This is a small cast, very small cast, only three characters. Guy, the murderer, well, the would-be murderer, Jenny, the old lady, and May, the kind of voice of reason, I guess. Who would you see playing some of these characters, these three characters?
Well, so I've had some time to think about this now, and I've got the two women picked out. I would put Cousin Jenny, the one that's taking all the medications. I would still use Meryl Streep for her. I just think Meryl plays a really solid old person. She's good at like the high drama situations, and she can be kind of snappish too.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, because Cousin May isn't really described like in character or form very much. So I'm just trying to pick somebody that is impactful in small doses. And everybody knows Imelda Staunton. So that's who I'm going with for her. The men, the male character, I guess. Who? I don't know. Who do you think for him?
Guy is interesting. He starts off kind of normal. I mean, they're having a philosophical discussion. It seems like a regular family thing, but what he says is very off-putting. And you start to think, murder is only murder if it feels like murder. And you really don't, you start to not trust him. Then you see him gambling. Then you see him try to commit a murder, which he believes is really clever, but be outsmarted by pest control. So he has a very kind of idiotic, ironic death. I was thinking it would be interesting to see John Malkovich in that philosophical discussion and then kind of overact the silly death at the end. But I don't know about the gambling. Do you? I think Guy is.
I think he could play a gambler.
Yeah.
I think he could.
Throwing the dice, giving long monologues.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay.
And then we have to think of somebody that would be really funny to do like the taxi driver cameo.
The taxi driver cameo.
Yeah, the taxi driver cameo, because definitely somebody is opening that door for those old women. And I think that Avram would get a kick out of like Mel Brooks or Danny DeVito having like a hey roll at the end. So I'm gonna add them in just for giggles.
I love that. You got your Danny DeVito in there.
I do. I have to get him in somewhere.
I think that's perfect. Do you think like anyone else for Guy? Do you see like John Malkovich might be good? Do you see anyone else? Maybe.
I don't know. I kind of thought about Steve Buscemi, but I don't know.
Steve Buscemi would be good too.
Like creepy, weird guys, but I don't know how he would do with the serious part.
I feel like Steve Buscemi would be really good at like wringing his hands through the serious part to like signal to the audience, like,
Something's going on.
Like, this is not just a philosophical musing. This is someone who's a little twisted. And then John Malkovich might be more straightforward with that beginning. So I think the way they would start it would be very different and could give you a different feeling for the story.
They'd shine in different portions, but I think they'd both be good.
Yeah. I think they would both be good too. So we're going to get it made. We got to get this movie made. We got to get...
Very short movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, sure. Well, you know what, actually? Have you seen... Well, sorry, I know you're reading more books. I kind of had a few weeks where I just watched too much TV, but Guillermo del Toro has that show, Cabinet of Curiosities, and it hasn't been super big, but it was quite interesting where he's taking classic fiction that are all short stories and then turning them into like a little chamber play kind of episode. So it could fit for something like that if they do a second season.
No, I've heard of that, but I have not checked it out yet.
I have a feeling
my streaming things expire.
That's better for your brain. I watched too much TV in a row, and then it was much too much. Reading is better. Right. Reading is better. So, Athena, thank you very much for coming on and discussing this story by Avram, Murder is Murder. And I want to ask you before we go, what are you reading now for One Reading Nurse?
Oh, well, again, first off, thanks for having me. This has actually been really fun. I actually just got this book yesterday, but one of my friends in the indie community has written this grimdark fantasy series called The Tragedy of Sedain, and this is book two. I mean, there's a ship and there's wizards flying. Can you see it?
Yeah, that's a great cover.
And there's wizards flying around the ship, and he even signed it for me.
Whoa.
So this is what I'm reading now. And if you are a fan of like wild magic, grimdark fantasy, totally recommend it.
Cool.
But I always vouch for the indie community, so.
That looks awesome. Can you say the author's name one more time?
John Palladino, actually a local author to me too, so even more cool.
That is very cool. John Palladino.
Hey, John. No, just kidding.
Hey, John! Everyone should read John Palladino's book.
Yay!
Very cool. Well, cool. Thank you very much, Athena, and maybe hopefully see you again sometime. We can talk more Avram, and I'm really excited to read more of One Reading Nurse. So everyone should go to onereadingnurse.com and start following along. It's very cool.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thanks, Athena.
Sounds like a story to me. Some crazy fable that you would not believe.